Blistering insight, well-researched fact, insightful comment. I'm afraid you've come to the wrong place. But welcome, because this is none other than the world-famous Leicester City Pubcast. Hello everyone, welcome to the Leicester City Pubcast, home of the 2016 Premier League champions and 2021 FA Cup winners. A very Merry Christmas, season's greetings from the Fosse Arms, where there's a table for two for myself, Tim, and for Killer. Good evening.
Good evening, Tim.
Season, when do you stop saying Merry Christmas, flip it into season's greetings?
Don't know. I mean, I think it's still
don't care
period now. Of course I care. It bothers me every single day of my life. Let's just keep it going. It's the festive period, isn't it?
Festive period. I noticed the XL bullies on the door of the Fosse Arms are looking slightly more nervous than usual. I'm not what that's all about. But Ethel's there. Place is looking spick and span. Superbly festive for Killer and myself to review a couple of games, rather than briefly, and then Ipswich in a bit more detail, and then look forward to a couple of games amongst some other stuff. So we'll sort of summarise maybe, Killer, how we think the festive period has gone so far. But first of all, Rotherham, another of our slightly spectacular late shows.
Yeah, nothing spectacular about the performance either, really, was it? But, you know, very sort of, it's about results, of course, and it's about just getting through these games unscathed, because it's one of those games where you look at it and you really struggle to come up with any sort of reason at all why the visiting team should get anything out of the game. But, of course, you never know, because it's football and it's the Championship. So it was one of those games I kind of just felt, by the time the result came in, that I just felt few, 3-0, good stuff, move on, nothing spectacular, some pretty mundane, bang average performances. But it was kind of like after the West Brom game, we'd mentioned, haven't we, Tim, that sort of like clutch of very winnable games.
Yeah.
And we won them all. And you just look at that sort of generally and go, we won them all, we scored 3 goals in all of them. It's been a very rich return of points. Meanwhile, it's quite nice to see some of our competitors having tougher games than we've had, and obviously stumble and fumble around a little bit.
Yeah, it's been a bonus. We'll come onto the table in a bit. But I suppose the thing to pick out of that game, Norm and I were speculating last week in your absence that you'd have been quite happy keeping Dakar in the team. I think we'd had a few texts, and he did well in that game, didn't he? Couple of goals, 1 penalty, seemingly a bit of a little vein of form he's found.
He's an odd player. I don't think I will ever be a Patson Daka fan. I am, however, a fan of a player that becomes part of a jigsaw within a team that just continually scores 3 goals. We know, and we'll come on to it, which in the end we'll know that run of form, if we can call it that, has gone. I was generally really surprised at the team, though, Tim. I thought Enzo forever is talking about this three games rest, isn't he? And it's something he's very clear about, and obviously it's sports science influenced and stuff. And there was me and a friend of mine were swapping texts before the game, and absolutely certain before the game that Cody would come in, Hamza Chowdhury would come in, maybe Dennis Pratt would come in, maybe Kelechi would start. And of course he dumbfounded all of us by doing none of that and playing pretty much an unchanged team. So I don't know about you, Tim, but that really surprised me, the team selection.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, we've often said, haven't we, nothing really surprises. I was surprised, because I thought, you know, this is the bottom team at home. You know, sooner I was shocked that they got to 0-0, to be honest, at half time. I mean, fantastic effort from them, but as ever, the last half hour with us tends to be good. But I was sort of okay with it, thinking, okay, fine, he's going to play Ndidi and Dewsbury Hall particularly a lot. Obviously, Winks is going to play the whole game. Fine. He must feel they've got their full legs ready to do 90 minutes in the Ipswich match again, which we'll come on to. And that is where the caveat on that Rotherham game comes in for me, because they didn't do that in the Ipswich game, which we'll talk about. And therefore, I do think that was a very, very odd decision to play such a strong team against the bottom team at home in the middle of the busiest period of the year.
It was baffling, wasn't it? He just does some really strange things. I mean, when you think back earlier in the season, do you remember, I perhaps keep going on about this game, but it still has me scratching my head. We played Norwich away at Carrow Road. Norwich were in a rich vein of form. And he rested a stack full of players. And you kind of got the feeling then that it was, I got the feeling it was Enzo's message of this squad is good enough to beat anybody on its day. It doesn't really make any difference who I play. Will be good enough. The performance might not be quite as good, but actually the players will be good enough. And of course, that day we won. And I thought, well, that may just reinforce his idea. Then against Sheffield Wednesday recently, I was really, really disappointed with his team selection. And obviously very disappointed with the outcome of the result, albeit most of the better players were on the pitch at the end. But yeah, I mean, absolutely, absolutely baffling with the Ipswich game round the corner. And of course, this is going to open the discussion up as to whether or not, given the fact when we get to the Ipswich game, but given the fact we conceded late, actually, was the problem that these guys were starting to flag a little bit? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, just going back to the point on the Norwich one, because that team selection, I think, does stand out as the most bizarre of all of his team selections, particularly at the time. You know, we had Norwich and Southampton within 4 days of each other, didn't we? Away from home, it looked like the nightmare week, and he put in an absolutely ridiculous team on paper against Norwich. Do you think he's recently thought, because he has been playing a more settled side recently, hasn't he? Do you think he just didn't know his best 11 at that point, for which you wouldn't criticise him?
I don't know though. I don't know. It felt like he'd got a very clear idea of his best 11, and he was just rotating. But I don't know, Tim. You might be right. I thought he had got a good idea, but he was just in this kind of like this is a really long season, and it's almost as if to some extent did the Sheffield Wednesday game mean that he's completely lost trust in playing or making too many changes? Because at the minute, it seems the only significant changes are along that back line. He's obviously worried about Justin, isn't he? He's worried about giving him too much game time. I think because of the fact that James Justin has got such a horrible track record of long-term injuries, I suspected the sports science team are saying you're going to have to absolutely manage his time here, because as soon as this guy gets any sort of fatigue, he will be prone to something pretty, pretty horrible. But it really just seems to be the same sort of people that are coming in and out. The same people are playing pretty much all the while. Vestergaard, you know, he was one booking away from suspension. Would you have rested him against Rotherham, played Cody? It seemed odd, didn't it?
Well, okay, let's come on to Ipswich. It then doubly seemed odd when he does play Cody. Now, I understand the Justin resting for the reasons that you've said. When I saw the team and that Fass was going to play fullback, because previous time out at fullback, he's absolute keystone Cops performance, wasn't he? Which reminiscent of the one Bournemouth away last year, if you remember that. He was all over the shop, Fass, in that game. This time at fullback, I'm kind of thinking, oh, blimey, is he, you know, are we? And actually, I thought Fass last night, we're recording this on Wednesday today, folks. I thought Fass against Ipswich was absolutely outstanding. I thought he was really, really good in that role. So, fair enough. But, I mean, to your point, putting Cody in for that game, when he could presumably have done that in the Rotherham game, seemed really odd. And I suppose it's a vote of confidence in Cody, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But Did he deserve a vote of confidence? I've been slightly disappointed with him, in truth. I don't think admittedly, he's not had the game time, he's not had the run of game, so maybe we're being a bit harsh. There's been times, however, where I've watched him and there's been a few question marks about him. Hopefully he'll get better. Go back to your point. Yeah, I thought Fass was really good last night. Some of his tackling and some of his intervention work was really, really good. I don't know if you noticed that. So he looked absolutely rock solid. Let's kind of go back to the point, because this is all about understanding ethos and understanding Enzo. As we've often said, there's things that he does that just have you scratching your head a little bit. And of course, when it doesn't quite come off, and it didn't quite come off last night, and again, we'll get on to the game, it should have done. You know, it should have done. We should have been done and dusted and on the coach home, really, with 3 points. Again, you start to question whether or not he got the decisions right. And, you know, again, we will dissect the game in a bit more detail. Frankly, a few head-scratching substitutes that I didn't really get. And certainly everybody else that was watching it in the Foss Arms didn't quite get either.
Yeah, and so, I mean, we're going to sort of talk about the year as a whole in a bit. But in terms of this game, I found myself having the odd grumble. Look, I think our listeners will understand. Any grumble we have has to be in the context that really this season is beyond our wildest dreams, isn't it? You only have to be a Leeds fan or a Southampton fan to realise that life actually ain't that easy, even if you're doing really, really well in the Championship in terms of getting straight back up. So unbelievably good. But last night, for goodness sake, you know, those substitutions, because I was going to say, if Norm had been on the show today, Norm kind of, certainly against me, I feel he did have the last laugh, because like Norm has been saying all season, we are better than Ipswich. And I've been pushing him, going, come on, mate, what's that based on? And he's, you know, he rationalised that, saying, look, they've come out of League One, we've come out of the Premier League. I thought the first half last night, it was an absolute golfing class. I really did. It's the first time I've watched Ipswich and thought, blimey, you know, you've got a major problem here with us. And I saw some of the game against Leeds, and I know Leeds sort of blitzed them, but I was quite shocked how comfortable we were against Ipswich in that first half. I thought I'd have snapped your hand off for a point before, and I am happy with a point, but I didn't expect it to be so easy for us. On we come to the second half, and as you say, these crazy substitutions that... It can only... I mean, Ndidi had got booked, hadn't he? But it was only his second booking of the season. So it's not like in the role that he's playing now, he's coming diving into rash tackles. I'm assuming, Killer, they're both substitutions to protect minutes away against the second best team in the division.
Yeah, but I was baffled by it. The Ndidi one, I had a slight forgiveness about it. I don't think he was having a great game. And obviously, he's off to the AFCON. So I kind of get, it's almost like you've got to get your head around life after Wilf Ndidi. But the one that really irritated me, in truth, was KDH. It made no sense. KDH has got, like, the Lampard-like stats. And that is the reason why he's so fruitful in the last 15 minutes of a game, is he's just that much fitter than most other players at this level. Yeah. And he's obviously quicker. And therefore, you look at his stats and guess what? He's weighing in with lots of late goals, lots of late runs. And it's almost like you've taken off a powerhouse midfielder. We may as well talk about it now, Tim. Absolutely outrageous decision not to get the penalty. But it was KDH making that break, wasn't it?
It's interesting you say that, because I did get a text from Norm saying the same thing. I was a bit more... Look, I'm a Leicester fan. I think it was a penalty. If I'm an Ipswich fan, you're not saying it's a robust shoulder charge. The guy did get the ball with his leg. So I think the leg element of the challenge, he's all clear on. The bit that's the debate is the bit before that, isn't it? With the upper part of his body. And I kind of think, I think it probably was a penalty, but only because I'm a Leicester City fan. I think if you're an Ipswich fan and that's given, you're saying that's a shoulder charge, aren't you?
I was in the pub last night it was a bunch of guys who I used to work with. Sat next to me was a Cardiff fan, sat the other side was a Spurs fan, sat next to me was a Liverpool fan. By the way, there's only one of them has actually got an association with their actual football club, the other two are Glory Boys.
They actually I wonder which.
Yeah, and they all turned around and said the same cast iron penalty. And I've got to be honest, every time I look at it, I see the same thing. I actually think he's had a double nibble at it. I just think the referee got it wrong, and I don't want to get involved with VAR. That's never going to convince me that that VAR's the right thing. But actually, if you wanted to look at it in terms of luck, bad luck, I thought we've had a bit of good luck this season. We had a bit of good luck against Sunderland. So we had a bit of good luck against Rotherham, but no doubt missed a penalty against Millwall, and the sending off didn't make any difference. We won the game anyway. But last night that would have just put it to bed, wouldn't it? I have no doubt we would have scored the penalty. He would then have been sent off, and we would have got 3 points. And, you know, I know you look at the stats and you go, oh, yeah, well, Ipswich had 19, 19 shots on goal. Did Hermansson really have that much to do during the course of the game? Obviously, they were going to ramp up the pressure in the last 20 minutes, weren't they? When they were a goal down, it's a Pat Portman Road. They were going to go for it. But I didn't think we really looked in any danger. In truth,
no.
And let's be honest, it was a horribly freakish goal. I mean, when have you ever seen a double deflection?
I know. I mean, did you see Pereira's face? You know, although the thing is, though, I mean, it's not the end of the world, that is it, in the cold light. I was irritated more than angry, because I think for me, I mean, we sort of said probably maybe 2 months ago now that it's done, automatic promotion. We talked about it on this show, didn't we? I think last night that would have been the title done. I think 9 points plus goal difference. You know, we've only lost three all season. You then, even Ipswich would have had three to catch us up. So it's kept that interesting. I don't know about you. I want Ipswich to come up with us. I know they got spanked at Elland Road since we've last spoken. That was a shocking scoreline, wasn't it? Leeds keep having their mishaps. Southampton under Russell Martin doing brilliantly. I haven't seen anything to say Ipswich don't go up a second, and maybe even pip us to the title. They haven't got if they get something at the King Power as well, then we'll have a run in each and see who wins. But I must admit, I thought last night, you can actually see, you know, it's as Norm said, like, you know, we are the Premier League side here, really, aren't we? And I just think fair play to them. I've got nothing at all against Ipswich. I'm sure you've got little bees in your bonnet about certain clubs around the country for fantastic football fan, completely illogical reasons. And Ipswich just isn't one of them, is it? It's an admirable club. I think when we were younger, you can remember that Bobby Robson team, can't you? And you sort of have fond memories of, you know, them disrupting the status quo. Portman Road's a proper old ground. And, you know, they're not. I've seen a lot of the comments from Ipswich fans in the Have Your Says on BBC over the course of this season. They seem to be a nice bunch. You know, when I read the Leeds reports, they're not like that at all. And you know, just everything about Ipswich, I just quite like it. So I'd love it if they could come up with us, really.
Yeah, you know my view on it. I know you think it's going to be a close title race. I don't think it will be. I think we'll win it by 12 points minimum, because I just think we're that much better than everybody else, and I think they'll all start falling away. And to some extent, there is an argument for Ipswich fans to say, well, we came across two good sides and we took a point.
Yeah.
They really needed to win that last night. Actually, if I look at... If my life depended on it, I think we'll win it by 12 points. I think Southampton will actually come second. I love the idea then that Ipswich and Leeds have a tear-up in the playoff final, which I think would be a really good game. You struggle to make an argument for Leeds. They're a funny old team. They go away to Sunderland and lose. They go and batter Ipswich at home. I watched them against Preston. Weren't very impressive. The goalkeeper then decides to pretty much punch somebody in the face and get himself sent off. And they've gone and lost another football match and sort of drift further and further down. I mean, if you're a Leeds fan, I think you're already looking at the playoff dates, aren't you? Whether you should make a provisional booking in London for the playoff final, because I can't see that with what they're doing that they're going to get automatic. So Southampton look very strong. Pleased for Russell Martin, because he just seems to me to be a good footballing guy. I wonder whether or not, actually, if he carries on doing a great job there, whether or not there might be a bigger club come calling for him.
Well, and Ipswich's manager, right? I think, you know, with his pedigree at Man U, both of them.
Yeah, they've both done really well. I mean, the thing is, it doesn't seem to transpire, does it? I mean, occasionally you'll get a club like Brighton took a bit of a gamble on Graham Potter, for instance. But generally speaking, these big clubs tend to shop around different markets than the Championship. But anyway, look, they've done well. I just think, again, you take the result in isolation last night. We should have won. We should have had the penalty. We should have been back on the coach. Should have been 2-0. But what a period it's been, though, Tim. I mean, if you think about from when we dropped points at Sheffield Wednesday, then go and beat West Brom, then get the four results that we got, scoring three times against clubs. A point last night for Ipswich was a bad result for them. It's a pretty good point for us in the cold light today. And you just look at that, wouldn't you, and go, yeah, do you know what? it's all pretty rosy. You're 24 games in, you've lost three of them. Within in the Championship, that's pretty good going.
Incredible. And so just to refresh listeners' memories, it just shocked me last night that Southampton have actually jumped above Leeds, but they jumped above them by 3 points. So we've got 59, all these off 24 games now. We've got 59, Ipswich have got 53, and Southampton have got 48, and our goal difference is out of sight compared to both of those. So, yeah, I mean, Ipswich have only taken 2 points out of nine if you include the East Anglian derby. So they've suddenly looking over their shoulders rather than up, aren't they? And I think I tend to agree with you. I think 12 points, winning it by 12 points at this stage probably sounds about right. And as you've said, Killer, I think if you'd have said to me, this is how the league table looks after the Boxing Day fixtures, we're still sort of in the festive period, aren't we? We've got a couple of games coming up very quickly before the FA Cup as well. So I suppose you've got to count them in, but they're touch wood, easier looking games, both of them before the AFCON as well. I'd have snapped your hand off for this league table being 11 points clear of Saints. Although, I think, are they 14 unbeaten now? I mean, they are on a monster of a run, but I'm reassured by the fact that, you know, Ipswich didn't manage to beat us. The first team Southampton are going to get by, if it's anyone, is Ipswich, not us. So I think we will be all right.
We'll be fine. Don't forget, last point I would say, Tim, is you tend to find teams, and history will tell you this, that they get to an unbeaten period of 14, 15 games, it will come to an end. And when it comes to an end, what happens then? Well, generally speaking, you lose again, draw one, lose. They'll hit some bumps in the road. You can't keep winning football matches. Again, you look back through history, there's only really Man City have been able to do it. Everybody else, you tend to get in the teens, and then at some point, see Aston Villa for details. It's the tracks that it starts to come off the tracks, doesn't it?
Been quite interested on social media, the thing with Leeds fans, that like this idea of a little white dot getting bigger and bigger in our rearview mirror, and all of a sudden that little white dot's become absolutely tiny. It's a red and white dot, if anything, now, isn't it? So yeah, I think they must accept they've probably shot it now. I don't think they're going to get past Saints too easily, let alone Ipswich. The thing on our horizon, though, Killer, we've sort of come. You know, we've come through this period without injuries, touch wood. The Christmas period, our injuries happened before then. What we have got that no one else has got to our extent is AFCON. So how do you think... So the players we're going to lose are Fatawu and Ndidi, Daka and Iheanacho. So my understanding of the Vardy's injury is a few weeks. I think there's some really good news on Callum Doyle with regards to potential cover for Justin. He sounds like he's pretty much ready to go. So he's been out for ages, bless him. So, you know, be good to welcome him back. But in terms of our attackers, because these are all of our attacking players, aren't they? Looks like Vardy isn't going to be... Well, he might be back. AFCON is the matches starting on the 13th of Jan. So the Asian Cup and AFCON both start being affected then. And then it obviously depends how long... different state teams staying in that competition for how long the players are affected. But we're going to lose those four from the 13th. So how do you see our team without them in it?
It's been an interesting one. I mean, obviously the transfer window's open. It'd be interesting to see if Leicester City do any business. The worry for me is obviously the striker situation. At the minute with Tom... Could we realistically go into that period with Vardy, who may still be clutching at his fitness, and just Tom Cannon? I mean, that's the question that you've got to ask yourself. Or whether or not, as a football club, that we understand that that's too lightweight and that we might need somebody in on loan.
Well, I was going to say, because it always makes me laugh when fans sort of say, oh, you know, we need to get someone in, you know, because we've got X, Y, Z going on in January. As a business person, you're not going to invest in a multi-million pound player with enormous wages to cover 21 days of football, are you? It just wouldn't make any sense. So I was thinking along the lines that you've said about loanees, potentially a very, very short term. It's only really three players we've got missing, isn't it? Because only Iheanacho or Daka is going to play. So from a
just to counter argue that, because I think actually, you know, you made a good point with regards to what you do as a business. But here's another argument with regards to this. Kelechi Iheanacho is out of contract in the summer.
Yeah.
Okay. I personally think he'll go. Now, that being the case, should we already, given the fact that the Premier League looks like it's pretty much a certainty, should we already now actually think to ourselves, maybe the time in the January is to strike a deal with another Championship club for a good level strike, or maybe a Premier League club who have got a striker that's not getting in. You know, I'm not necessarily going to start flinging names around, but you get the profile of player we're talking about. Do we get somebody in on the basis that in the summer, Kelechi goes potentially? And I think there's an argument to say maybe he does anyway. I don't know if we offer him a contract or not. He's certainly absolutely floundering at the minute at this level. And I thought he was woeful last night when he came on. Again, by the way. Yeah. So there's an argument to say he's on big wages. I know we're going to lose a stack of cash, but the reality of it is he's out of contract. We haven't offered him anything. So therefore, it's likely, Ivory picks up another 100 grand a week and we're going to want to shell that out or we let him go. I think then there's another argument with regards to Patson Daka. Daka's shown a bit of form at this level. I personally still think with Patson Daka, if you can, sell him on. So I think there was an argument then, Tim, to say we're gonna make our mind up about two players. You might even then make your mind up about Tom Cannon. You might even turn around and go, we'll sell him to another Championship club because that's probably his level. You might then offer Jamie Vardy a one-year contract. I don't know if you do.
Are you talking about the summer now?
I'm talking about the summer.
Right.
I'm just talking about, do you actually, given the fact that in January, for a fair chunk of games, we don't have anybody, do we therefore then start to make the investment process now and get a decent striker in that's actually going to be with the club come what, September, starting, you would imagine, in the Premier League?
See, I it's interesting this. So I was going to ask you about Daka. So, okay, let me ask you my Daka question, then I'll come back on what you've just said.
Yeah.
Someone offers 20 million, Bournemouth offer 20 million for Daka, as they did in the summer. Do you take that in January?
Yeah, I would take it. Yeah,
I thought you would say you wouldn't now, but I definitely would. Because I think in some ways, because our position is so strong now in the Championship, I think we can afford to take a few risks. And I think, you know, we are going to lose a couple of games in AFCON. I don't know. But I would be very much now in planning mode for the Premier League. So then the question comes back that you've said around, okay, you know, do you try and get someone who can do that? And there's two things there. Number one, I don't think you're going to get a real, because I think we need one or two real top draw Premier League strikers for next year. Because I think Iheanacho's not up to it and out of contract. I think Daka, we know, isn't up to it in the Premier League, well as he's doing now. And if he stays for the rest of this season, fine. And Vardy is brilliant, but he's Vardy and he's another year older. So I just think we're definitely going to need to. So I wouldn't want to compromise the level of player we get in now. Now, it's interesting that you said, I don't want to start flinging names around, because I was going to fling some names at you when I was having a look at this yesterday. And I thought there must be Premier League teams who've got a striker that they wouldn't mind flipping out on loan for a bit of top-level Championship football for 3 or 4 months. And I could not think of a single striker. And I'm sure some of these teams like the Man Cities and the Chelseas have probably got teenagers that we might end up getting. And I think that might be sensible. But don't you just think there's a dearth of strikers in the Premier League? You know, if I go from the top down in the Premier League, Liverpool's main striker is Nunes. Absolute rubbish. I don't understand these Liverpool fans that think he's great. Arsenal, Gabriel Jesus, everyone's saying Arsenal need a striker if they're going to win the title. Yeah. Villa have got Ollie Watkins, fine, but he's a very, very, very poor man's Harry Kane. Spurs, they've sort of got a collection of people that play in that position. Man City have got the best striker in the world. Man United have got a lad that scored his first goal in 1,000 minutes up top, or Anthony Martial. West Ham have got a guy that doesn't get in the team, Antonio. I could go on. That's the top seven teams, you know, let alone the ones. I can't think of a striker we could get.
No. And I mean, everybody's talking about Nicholas Jackson being rubbish at Chelsea.
Oh,
he's actually in the top 10 goal scorers at the minute. I mean, believe it or not.
We got three or something.
We got Dominic Solanke, who I've got to say, I thought would never cut the mustard. Yeah. He's the second joint top goal scorer. Obviously, you've got Jarrod Bowen when he's a midfielder for a start. You mentioned Watkins. Isaac at Newcastle looks a good player to me. And Bueno at Brentford. And obviously, you've got Ivan Toney coming back. But I mean, already, you've got Chelsea fans talking about, you know, we should be in for Toney, etc., etc. There's a complete lack of quality strikers. We're not going to get anything out of the Premier League. I don't fancy the idea of picking up a reserve player. They don't go very cheap, given the fact that Chelsea had to play Man City $40 million for somebody that may or may not make it at that level. I don't know. I think you're probably better off just having a sniff around the Championship, Tim.
Yeah, maybe.
Taking a punt on something.
So the problem with that is you're less likely to get a loanee out of the Championship. This is where I come back to the, you know, I think we're going to get promoted, and therefore I don't really want to waste money at the wrong level. You know, we're going to sit down, the board are going to sit down in this. Well, we should be sitting down, shouldn't we? You and I should be sitting down advising the board, as we've said for years, frankly. But on the basis that they don't ask us, the board are going to be sitting down in the summer saying, you know, what sort of Leicester City are we going to be? You know, and I am fascinated by what's going to happen in the summer, because we're either going to be right. That was a horrible aberration that one manager caused, Mr. Rodgers. Let's get back to being top 10 Leicester City. Now that requires a certain level of striker, or it's going to be, we're a newly promoted club, first year, massive risk. You know, we better be careful and get ourselves someone who's going to nick us 12 goals or something. And I don't know. I just don't know. It's going to come down to money and where the clubs now see themselves. I suspect some of the damage has been done on status for us. But it'll be interesting, because I just think we should try and keep our powder dry, whichever of those scenarios it is. I don't know. Maybe there's someone in France or something like that that could do with a bit. Someone who's not really working out in France that, you know, could do with 5 months to get his career back on track. I don't know, but I think it's going to be hard. If we have to go through with just Cannon through January, maybe so be it. And maybe McAteer could support.
Yeah, possibly. I don't know, Tim. I mean, what we do know about this Leicester City setup, and again, you don't want to be too critical of it, but what worries me a little bit is when we decided to invest all that money in the training ground, I don't know why, I just got this idea that there'd been a separate pot of money been put aside, and money had been put into that, and that wasn't going to affect the overall transfer kitty, because the club was sensible enough to know that to compete at this level, you've got to keep buying players. Turns out they hadn't done that at all. We were completely skint. We didn't have any money. We didn't make any signings last summer at all, which of course was absolutely calamitous for the football club and clearly conducive to us being relegated. What worries me this time round is now we've got this whole thing about the new stadium, this hotel, state-of-the-art this, state-of-the-art that. What worries me is, are we once again going to be dipping into the fairly limited transfer pot that we've got to start building up an infrastructure, when we know, we look at this team, and of course it's a good-looking Leicester City team in terms of the Championship, but we can all see exactly where the flaws are going to be next year with regards to the Prem. We've got a central defence with no pace. We're a little bit lightweight. We would certainly need more attacking options. We've got 2 to 3 really good wingers at this level. How do they translate to the Premier League? Are we just going to end up with guys that just get found out? You know, Fatu is going to come across people like Kyle Walker, that sort of profile of player. Is he going to make the mincemeat of him like he has been doing? Probably not, you know. And then all of a sudden, you just end up thinking, wow, it's going to be difficult. And I don't know. I don't know, but all I know is I am concerned. I really am concerned, because I have a horrible feeling that Rudkin et al. Have got a little plan, and that little plan probably involves a transfer kitty of about 25 million, and he's already convinced that that's all we need to keep this team. Seriously, because we've seen it and we've lived it and breathed it, haven't we?
Surely Tottenham learned his lesson. I mean, you know, we have been tremendous. Coming on to have a look at the year killer and looking back on the year and then looking into next year, we've been tremendously fortunate with getting Maresca, not fortunate, credit to Top and Susan Whelan, who we've been critical of. They got the right manager in eventually, because it does look like they tried to get Jesse Marsh first. Well, they did try to get Jesse Marsh first, but they landed on the right manager, and we have landed on our feet to be this far clear in this tough league at this stage in the season, pretty much guaranteed automatic promotion. So, you know, they've done that well, you'd have to say, wouldn't you? But I think going forward, yeah, I just hope that Top's learned his lesson. And this could easily have gone wrong. Leeds and Southampton seasons haven't gone wrong. They've gone spectacularly right. Both of them have taken 4 or 5 weeks to adjust. New squads, all of that stuff. 4 or 5 weeks, 6 weeks into the season to adjust. And then they're blowing the division away. The problem is, this is a complete one-off year where those 4 or 5 weeks are going to cost them automatic promotion. So I think that's how unlucky they've been. I mean, that could have been us, couldn't it?
It could have been. But is this going to be, paradoxically, the problem? And what I mean by that is, last but one summer, one of the reasons Brendan Rodgers was given no funds was because there was a resounding understanding coming from Rudkin and Whelan, this, your squad is already good enough. You don't need any more money, you don't need any more funds.
Yeah.
That was the draft. Is there going to be that worry that, again, that Rudkin and Whelan are going to turn around and say to Enzo, you've absolutely spanked that championship. There is nothing. You should be nothing but optimistic. But that team, that squad, I know we've got a number of players out of contract, so there's going to be stuff that needs to be sorted out and stuff. But that team is going to be more than good enough to stay in the Premier League. And that's the worry. That's the worry, isn't it?
Then they won't have learned their lesson, will they? I mean,
No, they won't. But, you know, again, is... I'm just playing devil's advocate. I don't know how these people think. But, of course, you're getting to that point where Leicester City now. Leicester City look like... They look like lodgers around a house that should never be in that house in terms of the league, the championship, don't they? It's like you've got the Queen staying in... The King, sorry, staying in your spare room. It just looks like... How did you ever manage to get here? Yeah. I'm sure every club's saying that. Now, of course, is there an argument for Rudkin to turn around and go, no, don't worry about it. The problem and the damage was all about Brendan Rodgers, and we've got rid of him. We've got a better manager. Therefore, the investment in this football club doesn't need to be wholesale. We can make a few tweaks, offer a few contract extensions where we need to. Everything's going to be good in the hood. And all I would say is I just think from our point of view, if that is the situation, we're going to struggle.
Yeah, hey, well, that's the end of the season. As and when promotion's confirmed, we'll have a lot of time, hopefully. We could have a ridiculous amount of time to talk about this sort of thing, exactly. Couldn't we? But yeah, they're massive decisions they're going to have to make. But I look at the state, and assuming they're going to go ahead with the stadium, it would be utterly pointless. You know, particularly the stadium expansion, it would be utterly pointless if we ended up back in the championship again. It can't be that daft. But I do follow your logic, and we've seen Rudkin particularly make all sorts of catastrophic decisions, as well as some good ones last summer, we must say, to balance them a little bit. What about the year as a whole, Killer? What's your, anything stand out from your sort of favourite memory, or, you know, 2023? How do you look at 2023?
Well, it's bizarre, isn't it? Because I'm just going to spend a little bit of time on this, Tim, because I think it's interesting. 2023 was a year that started... From a Leicester City point of view, it started actually pretty well. We lost to Forest in January, and then we got a point against Brighton. But actually, round about February, do you remember at the end of the January transfer window, we made three good signings, and it looked like we'd turned a corner. We went to Aston Villa, beat them 2-4. Do you remember? Yeah. And then the following Saturday, one of the best performances I've ever seen from any Leicester City team when we dismantled Spurs 4-1.
11th of February, 2023.
11th of February. And then the following weekend, we went away to Manchester United. We absolutely dominated them for half an hour. We should have been 2 or 3 goals up. but contrived to lose 3-0, but kind of came away from that and said, that's okay. Do you know what? We were unlucky. On another day, we could have won, et cetera, et cetera. And then the rot started, didn't it? 0-1 Arsenal. I would say one of the low points for me of 2023 was the FA Cup game, the fourth round against Blackburn, where they absolutely dismantled us. It was embarrassing. But after that, it got pretty horrendous. Southampton away 1-0, at home to Chelsea 1-3, away to Brentford 1-1, in a game, by the way, that we barely had a kick. We then went to Palace away, lost 2-1, Villa at home, lost 2-1. Here's where it gets really horrible. Here's where you find out why we went down. Leicester City 0, Bournemouth 1, 8th of April. Awful result. Leeds United 1-1 away. Well, you know, again, that could have gone. And then I think
we should have won that game, shouldn't we?
We should have won that game. And then the two calamitous results, the two that put the nails in the coffin. We had Everton down here, 2-2, must win game, 2-2. We then on the following Monday went away to Fulham.
Fulham, yeah.
Do you remember 5-3? Yeah. Weren't we 5-0 down at some point? Or
that was before we knew that Fulham largely do beat teams 5-0, by the way. But
it was absolutely horrific, and I'm afraid that the damage at that point was done, which is a shame because actually, that again, it's all a good reminder because when you start to get to our age, all these results just merge into the background. The last two games, of course, we went and got a very spirited point at Newcastle, the 0-0. It's one of those games where it's like, I don't know how it's ended 0-0, but and against West Ham last game of the season, we did what we had to do. You know, a tricky fixture as well, the 2-1. You know, it was just horrible. But, you know, we remember doing this show, and as far as I was concerned, it was the Everton result, and I said it at the time, it was the Everton result. That was the must-win game. It had already come down to us or them to have to play them at home, to get them at home, Tim. To get them at home, full house, king power, and not beat them. That really was the issue. So, yeah, that was the low point for me, not beating Everton at home. What about you?
Timothy Castagna's toe was an inch away from sliding the ball in against Newcastle. That would have even got us out of jail then. If I summarise the year, I think the year was a disaster, an absolute disaster. I mean, the second half of this year, what we've done, and as I've already mentioned, I won't go over the ground again, we could be in Southampton's shoes, we could be in Leeds' shoes. You know, these are teams doing very, very well, and they're nowhere near us. So I am fully conversant with how well we have done in the final third of this year. But to say, you know, if you'd have said to me on the 1st of January, by the way, this isn't just a relegation fight, mate, you're actually going to go down, I wouldn't have believed you. I'd have done the James Maddison. We'll be fine. I'd have said, look, I know this is bad. I know, but you know, if this carries on soon, they will get rid of Rodgers sooner or later. But they didn't. It's the club status that's been damaged. Whether that's irreparably or short term, we'll find out about this time next year, I would think, because we'll know whether we're in another relegation fight. It may well be that we've got away with it, and because the Premier League is so weak at the moment, we can jump back into mid-table Premier League positions and get into FA Cup runs and League Cup runs and go and win another trophy. Maybe do a West Ham, maybe so. But I think I can't get away from the fact that this club getting relegated, we've looked at it, didn't we? It's the second best group of players that have ever been relegated out of the top division in England. And I'm afraid that has to go down as a disaster.
Yeah, 100%. No doubt.
What about next year? What okay, a prediction, as many as you want, really, but a prediction from you on something football for next year.
Something football. Do you want Leicester City, obviously?
Well, I tell you what, let's have a Leicester one and a non-Leicester one.
Okay, Leicester City, I think we'll win the league by 12 points. I think we will be around the 104, 108 mark in terms of points. I think it will be pretty comfortable. More of the same. I do think Enzo's laid down the standards at the club in terms of how he wants to play. And like, you know, as we've said, there's times when we watch this Leicester City. I think the thing is with Leicester City, when they purr, they just look unbelievably good at this level. And for so often in football matches, they're not quite at that level, which is why you always feel that quite that little bit of a short change, don't you? You think to yourself, I know you're miles better than this. And, you know, you, again, you talk about highlights. I think some of the Leicester City goals they've scored under Enzo have been brilliant, and none better than the Mavididi goal against Birmingham. I mean, that was just...
yeah.
Brilliant. You can watch it all day, can't you? I mean, just how two guys out of attack. Absolutely fabulous. And I think
well worth sitting with their fans for.
They enjoyed it so much, but they actually came down and applauded Mavididi, which I thought was nice. There was a couple of autograph hunters as well. I know online it's been very well received.
Make winning friends. Well, okay, I want one more out of you. Two more out of you. Two promoted sides in order then, but I think you've already said this. You're going for Southampton?
Yeah, I'm going to go for Southampton. I think the playoffs are going to be interesting. I think it'll be Ipswich, Leeds, probably West Brom, and then maybe a surprise team to sneak in. I'd like to see Sunderland because I like Sunderland on a number of levels. You can't rule out somebody like a Bristol City maybe just sneaking in, which I know our friend Gareth will be very, very happy to hear that.
Yeah, okay, won't be so happy because I think they might not. But I think Leicester and Ipswich will go straight up. I've thought that since we got away, really. I think the playoffs will be, as you said, but the sneaking in team, I'm going to go with a very long shot of Stoke. Because they got Schumacher now as a manager. Yeah. Really rate him. Got off to a good start. And they're miles off, but you can well be miles off in this league and get into the playoffs. My massive, bold prediction. This is a 20-to-1 shot type prediction. I don't necessarily think it's going to happen, but I'm gonna say it for fun. Oh, it's not very fun. I don't think Maresca will be manager this time next year. I don't.
Yeah, okay. I've got to say, me and a couple of other Leicester fans have had a very similar discussion to that.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I wouldn't want to put a lot of money on it, but I just think there's some things that could go very right for him, in which case I think he's going to be seen as the next one out the Pep stable. Better gobble him up at a bigger club than us. Or I think we could have a Burnley situation, and I don't think our owners this time, having been burned, will be as patient as Burnley's are with company. So there you go. That's a bit of a, I hope I'm wrong on that one. Mm. We'll just very briefly come on and have a look at Cardiff and Huddersfield. Before we do that, Tony, thanks for your email. We are going to go through your email. We want to make till Norm's back for that one. But thank
hilarious,
you.
Hilarious, by the way. Hilarious.
Sending that in. Yeah, we'll come back to that one. And then Cardiff and Huddersfield, then Killer. We could treat them together because there's never any point really predicting teams, is there? But two easiest games easing us into the pre-AFCON weeks.
Yeah, and you know, let's go with evidence. Leicester City have dropped 13 points this season. Which isn't a great deal at all. And actually, if you look at where we've dropped them, Middlesbrough away, absolutely world-class free kick. Leeds, who have played very well down here. Hull, who actually did a job on us. Sheffield Wednesday and Ipswich. The point I'm getting to is all of the evidence suggests when we play two mediocre-level championship teams, then it's massive odds on that we're going to win. Of course, you can't take anything for granted, but we should just have enough.
Yeah, I agree with you on both. I mean, I think that, you know, there are going to be some tougher tests to come, but I think these two, it starts hard to bet against us, isn't it? Talking of which, Killer, predictor, don't know if our predictions for those two matches, Rotherham Ipswich, caught your eye. You and I both went 3-0 against Rotherham.
Yeah.
Norm also got the result right, but not the scoreline. We both predicted draws against Ipswich. I predicted 1-1, so Tim's got 6 points out of the last six.
Well done, mate.
Taking me up to 23. You've had an absolute stormer as well. You're up to joint lead with Norm on 24. So it really couldn't be tighter going into the new year. So there we go. I've got Norm's predictions for Cardiff and Huddersfield. Before I tell you those, what are yours?
Okay, so I'm going to go Cardiff 1, Leicester City 2.
Yep.
And Huddersfield, I'm going to go Huddersfield 3, Leicester City 3, Huddersfield 0.
I thought you were going to spring a bit.
I know. Oh, by the way, you didn't ask me for my my outrageous prediction for 2024.
Oh, go on then.
In 2024, around about mid-May, Jamie Vardy will make his last appearance for Leicester.
Oh no! Oh, both of our long-range predictions are horrible.
Yeah,
I hope they both don't. Yeah. Go on, we've got 2 seconds. One more. Premier League champions this year.
Premier League champions. I still think Man City will come good. My Premier League prediction of interest is that Graham Potter will take over at Manchester United.
Okay, I will say I agree on Man City, and mine is that Forest are going down. Come on, Luton. Right, 2-1 and 3-1 you've gone. I'm going 3-1 against Cardiff and 3. I'm going to join you on 3-0 against Huddersfield, see if we can get another 3-0 double. Norm's gone 3-1 against Cardiff as well, and then 4-1 against Huddersfield. Final thoughts, Killer?
Let's do some business in January, Leicester City. Let's be sensible. Let's start the investment for the summer. Let's go for it now.
That's it, folks. We're all off to wish you all a very happy new year of what should be a fantastic promotion year for Leicester City. See you next week. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you enjoyed the Leicester City podcast, please subscribe and tell everyone about it. If you hated the Leicester City podcast, please keep it to yourselves. See you next week.